Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 79, Troubleshooting Things in a Virtual World. Here we go. Today, my guest is once again Derek Schallen. How you doing, Derek?
I'm doing well, Rick. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. I'm busy. We're coming up on the Thanksgiving holiday here in the United States. And I tell you what, Derek, I need a break. I'm just so busy and so strung out that, wow, what a crazy year it's been thus far for me. I take it you're busy as well?
Busy doesn't even get close. I didn't get to work a little bit this weekend.
Oh, ouch. Ouch. I am really good about turning off when it's time to be off. I will say I do that pretty good. So, Derek, this is not your first time on. You are on episode 34. It's been a while, and great to have you back. But it's kind of funny because, do a little shameless plug here, you, me, and Mr. Scott Lowe have all conspired for the Windows 8 training guide. So I only contributed one chapter because I thought that was a realistic amount of work that I could take. But, you know, that's a book on Windows 8. So, Derek, share your experience. What do you think of that?
It was an awesome experience, but it was a whole lot of work.
Yeah.
One chapter, or in my case, I did eight chapters.
Ouch.
Well, I've been going pretty heavy since, it was about June, I think, when we started it out.
Yep.
And between the get it done on a tight schedule and then the revisions and then the revisions and then the are you sensing a pattern with revisions?
Mm-hmm.
It's been a little bit nuts, and I'm kind of looking forward to hearing that it's actually going to press and it's going to be out of my hands soon.
Same here. It's tough to go back and forth, especially, you know, in the case of a chapter, it's 30 plus pages, right? And then I'm used to blogs, right? Sub one page. Life is a lot easier to, interactively edit something like that.
So I have to say I was impressed with myself to be able to go that many pages on a particular topic and not go insane.
It was easier than I thought. I had never, on a commercial, basis, written anything of that size. In fact, I was a little bit, wow, that's going to be tough. And in my case, it was the virtualization chapter specifically for Windows 8. And it was not a problem, actually, coming up with that much topic or content. So, it was a different experience. You know, you and I have done most of our, writing experience in the blogosphere. But to go over to that other realm, it was an interesting experience. Don't yet know if I'll do that again.
I think I would do it again, but I don't know if I would do it again, for like the next year. It'd be longer than a year before I did it again.
Yeah, good way of looking at it. I personally like the, blog, article, anything sub 5,000 words I'm really, really comfortable with. But anyways. Okay, well, what we're going to talk about today, Derek, is troubleshooting things in a virtual world. And, I'm looking to you. You're a practicing IT professional, and you're in central Wisconsin. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, cool. So, when you go about troubleshooting things in a virtual world, and if I remember correctly, Derek, at least in your professional practice, you're almost 100% virtual in terms of the data center. Is that correct?
Yes, we are.
Cool.
I had to think about that for a minute. Getting close.
Yeah, that's an important milestone. Once you start getting, the big things, right, the file servers, the Exchange servers, getting all that virtual, you have to somehow quantify your performance, and it might not feel like it's much, but, in terms of operating systems, if you could say that, 100% of them are running on a virtual machine, that's a great milestone, or even 90, 80% as well. But, when you reach those high levels of consolidation, your troubleshooting changes, right? So how you go about fixing things is different. So, at the high level, before we kind of jump into some specifics, Derek, what are some of the tricks that you take in looking at things when you're starting to troubleshoot in a virtual world?
Well, I have to say it's kind of interesting to look at a virtual machine in terms of memory consumption. Because we had an application that was running on a physical machine that had, 2 gig of RAM, and the machine would run out of resources almost every day. So I thought, well, it takes forever for it to reboot, and it's kind of a problem. So what if we move that machine to a guest machine and see if it performs differently. Currently, it still has the same amount of RAM, and it still performs about the same. It still kind of causes a little bit of runaway, but the reboot process takes less than a screen full of pings to complete. So it's very fast. It doesn't get in the way. It's mission critical, but it's not something that can't just go away for, you know, 5 minutes in the middle of the day.
Oh, yeah.
So that's definitely been helpful.
What about, you know, and that's, I guess, really a performance troubleshooting, and that's a whole category of troubleshooting on its own. You know, do you have any, have you taken any, like, application monitoring metrics or something like that to page or alert or send a text when something happens or something like that?
We do a little bit of that, but it's not necessarily something that I expect to see, and not that anyone expects to see monitoring every day, but I don't really do it with the guile of, it's going to get me out of bed right now, or at 3 in the morning, or whatever. I want to get to that point, but I don't think we're quite there yet, and it's just purely because I haven't had the time to tackle it as a milestone, if you will.
Yeah.
I want to manage, like, okay, is the domain controller up? When the domain controller is down, somebody needs to be awake.
Yeah.
But to look at all of the little services that we might use that might be important to a couple people, but not everybody, mm-hmm. there's no way I'm going to try to monitor all of those, at least right now.
Oh, understood, because there's a, and if I remember right, Derek, you're pretty much a one-person shop, is that right?
That would be correct.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a certain amount of definite comfort in that, right? You kind of have a high competence level from the infrastructure to the app, but it's also tough because it's really predictable to fix something. You know what to do when this happens, right? My challenge when it comes to troubleshooting virtual environments is, you know, as we go more virtual, right, this abstraction layer does more than just separate operating systems and applications from the infrastructure, especially in the midsize and larger organizations, that it's actually going to separate the staff, right? So what the application teams are doing, that isn't always something that the infrastructure teams know about. So, you know, that abstraction also becomes a people thing. And, you know, when it comes to performance, right, a lot of app conversations come up because a lot of times we don't always know what the application needs. And, you know, when you and I talked last time on the podcast, we said, you know, it's pretty hard to change the application. But when it comes to addressing a situation where we don't always know what the application needs and it may spike outside of any predictive behavior, what kind of things have you done to address that?
I have a short list of people that understand certain applications that we use better than I do, because there are times during somebody's workflow process that one of these applications will generate an error, and the message that's returned is that the error is outside of the known list of errors.
Ugh.
So there's not really a fix except for to kill it and start over.
That's like an undefined error. That's kind of ugly. And that's back to change the app, right? That's really an application shortcoming, because one of the things I always say, and I used to say this when I worked, you know, before I was taking my role at Veeam, I would take the approach of, I cannot accept a technology that I can't protect or manage. And that's everything as specific as an application, even down to a platform like virtualization, right? If I can't protect it or manage it, I shouldn't really get in the business of using this type of technology, because it can quickly get out of my control realm. You know, but I realize not everybody has the option to say no. And the reality is we have what we have, and we have to support it, and we have to make it better sometimes. How about taking the approach of troubleshooting connectivity, right? Because a lot of times, you know, performance might be right, but something else on the infrastructure level might be off. You know, in fact, you and I were talking about something related to that just today, actually. How do you go about troubleshooting, like, you know, physical issues in a virtual world?
Well, I've learned, I think, the hard way at least once not to pull the cable out. that was an interesting problem. Because, oh, it's redundant, it'll be fine. Pull it out, check it, make sure it's, you know, it's going to be moved or whatever, and then things just started to fail. That was a while ago, and I will never do it again. But
well, what you found there is that storage-based storage protocols delivered over Ethernet don't like a path interruption midstream. That's basically what you found, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Luckily, the only thing damaged was stuff that was in flight, but when you rely on storage over Ethernet all the time for everything, everything is in flight all at once, or you don't really know what's on the wire when you pull the cable out.
Right.
There could be a load of data, there could be somebody saving a text file.
What about, when it's one of those things where it's... Is it specific to the technology? Because I think you're talking about iSCSI, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. How about like, let's see, NFS. Have you ever used NFS much?
I have not used NFS.
You know, I used to be so mad, or so particular, I guess, about NFS. Like, I wouldn't use it. I'd avoid it, because I really didn't understand it, I'll be honest with you. And then I also took kind of the high road, and this made a lot of sense in the vSphere 3 and 4 days, but I would always say things like, well, NFS is a second-class citizen to VMFS in the VMware realm, right? And to an extent, in that era, I had nothing but evidence to support that, right? The features were always delivered on VMFS first. Nowadays,
sure.
the gap is shortened, and... Mesh Cytokinesis from Israel had told me that, you know, everything you can do is really good on both platforms. In fact, you should really consider NFS. And after a while, I started to, you know, hear what he was saying, and he's right. It is pretty much feature on par. So, you know, for those of you out there checking NFS out, you know, it might be worth giving it a try.
That's kind of where I run into a problem with, you know, whether it's VMFS or NFS or pick your platform, I get stuck in the rut that I don't have time to go out and spend a whole lot of time with all of these technologies to understand them enough where I can implement them in production.
Well, that's true.
iSCSI happens to be the one that I'm most comfortable with. It's not always the easiest one. I found that out this week. But I understand what it's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I can pretty much expect it to do the same thing every time, so it functions.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's good about iSCSI is, should you go down a route where you want to leverage something like Hyper-V, you know, your basic iSCSI skills will apply there as well. Sure, it's different. There might be drivers, might be MPIO drivers or whatever, but, you know, first of all, NFS is, well, actually, let's restate that. NFS historically has not been a good idea for Hyper-V and for Windows, but Windows Server 2012 actually has pretty good NFS support, but it is kind of one of those things that they purported, well, now we got it right. Okay. So far, they got it right, but I'm just saying, historically, you were way better off sticking with block storage. So I think in the end, the storage doesn't matter, and you brought up a good point. You know how to work with it. You know how to support it. You know how to administer it. So that really is a very important kind of entry point to your ability to use that technology. Is that fair?
Absolutely.
Cool.
And it wasn't something I understood overnight. I mean, it took some studying and some questions and just to kind of get me up to speed, because when I first started thinking about the idea of it, I couldn't remember what a LUN was. I couldn't remember what the acronym stood for. I couldn't tell you how many times I Googled it just because I couldn't remember it.
Oh, we should have another quiz episode. That would be awesome. You know, acronyms like that. I love that kind of stuff. And was your journey to virtualization, was that really the kind of the thing that pushed you into shared storage?
Absolutely. The gear arrived on the same day.
Really? Interesting.
When we went down the path to shared storage, because the previous storage... We had a Windows storage server running Windows 2003. It's a great device. The thing was solid. It was fine. But But the Windows disk, and notice I said disk, not partition,
right,
was way too small. The amount of room that was available was approximately, there's maybe 10 gig of space left over.
Yeah.
And just because it's a server that's only going to push files around doesn't mean you don't have to hit that little service called Windows Update.
Yep.
And they tend to fill those drives up pretty fast. And we needed a solution that wasn't reliant on monthly, weekly, et cetera, updates from Microsoft, and decided to go with shared storage and virtualization all at the same time.
Gotcha.
So I was kind of learning all of that technology at once.
Well, and that was really similar to my experience as well, because virtualization brought me into shared storage. And it was one of those things that I was like, okay, I'm going to try this VMware thing. I'd done it on the, you know, the local storage realm, but now I'm going to go, you know, full in and learn this as part of the way. And I've heard the term SAN, you know, I've all my friends were doing it, right, but I hadn't. So this was back in 2006, so it was quite a while ago, but, you know, I got there. So, yeah, that and that's part of the learning process, and it's it definitely makes it entertaining.
That's for sure. And one thing I've sort of found through experience is that, yeah, the SANs and iSCSI and all this big enterprise type, all these big enterprise type words and this big data stuff is great. And you have to understand how all that complex stuff works, but don't forget the small stuff like share permissions.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't go away.
If you create a share, you have to check the share permissions, and nobody will be able to get to it. They can see it, but they probably can't get to it because it defaults to read-only, and that is a pain to fix.
Well, and those problems don't go away. In fact, I'd argue that more of them come up because once you're virtual, it's way more convenient to deploy more virtual machines and applications. And then from there, you're going to have more of those problems. So I've actually taken the approach that anything you can do to drive all that administration centrally, things like group policy, system center config manager, things like that to really drive everything centrally, especially in the Windows world, you're going to do yourself a favor in the long term because as virtualization goes on, you're just likely going to increase the number of systems. And it could even be things as what may seem very simple, like a virtual machine template. You know, the customization and dropping in either the MAC key or the, you know, the activation server. All those things add up in terms of efficiency so that your configuration actually doesn't vary too far from the way that you need it.
Well, not only that, but you would be able to train somebody to be, I guess, your backup or somebody to fill in for you if you're on vacation. I have somebody here that's like that, and she's comfortable with most things, but still haven't mastered the idea of a virtual machine. And this kind of made my hair catch fire a little bit. I had left one of the host machines up on the KVM with just the, you know, VM Linux screen up and didn't even think about it and was off. And the person that was filling in for me was trying to get to a system and couldn't figure out what to do and shut the host machine down.
So instead of taking one down, 15 or 20 went down.
Yeah, there was. I think there was like 7 or 8, and there was. It wasn't email, and there was not at that time because I was sort of in the middle of moving to vSphere 5. There was no domain controllers on it, so I dodged a bullet. But it was a mess because I had to fix all my backups and fix all the stuff that, well, this didn't work because, and this is failing. But in a couple of days, I was back online. It just made me think about how much documentation you need to have and how much training you really need to do for people that aren't necessarily in IT every day or see virtualization every day or understand what the difference between shutting down and restarting a virtual machine and shutting down and restarting a host machine is.
Well, yeah, it's quite impactful. In fact, your domain of failure is quite increased, and hopefully you're able to recover from that okay. And you and I were talking about something else yesterday, and I showed you some additional recovery techniques that were pretty cool, so that's all good. So,
awesome.
So, you know, additionally, Derek, when it comes to troubleshooting, especially, you know, you wear all hats. That's kind of an interesting, you know, situation in that regard. Love it or hate it, it's a fact that you have to wear all hats. What do you do when you find an impasse between the application and the infrastructure, specifically when virtualization comes into play? You know, in the larger enterprises, this is the finger pointing, right, where the app team is pointing at the virtualization team, or the maybe both are pointing at the storage team because they're not delivering enough IOPS. How do you broker that situation when it's yourself?
Well, it certainly doesn't do me any good to get any fights with myself, but I tend to do that because you're, like, focused on storage for a while and, well, this should be working. This should be working. Why isn't it working? And then all of a sudden you got to go back and remember, well, what about these apps over here? They need to be up eventually. They may not need to be up right now because you're trying to figure out the storage, but they need to be up sooner rather than later. And it's kind of there's a fine line between how much time I have and what's important.
Right.
Because without the storage and without the back end, the other stuff, yeah, it matters to everybody else, but it's never going to work.
Right. Right. Well, I think that it's, a certain amount of reality kicks in where you're like, okay, here's where we are, here's where we need to go, right? Y'all are going to come with me or y'all are going to hold off. So that's good stuff, good stuff. Well, hey, Derek, we're going to start wrapping up here on the podcast. I keep it light, I keep it quick here on the Veeam Community Podcast, you know, very, you know, kind of succinct things that our listeners hopefully enjoy and practical tips that they can take with them in their day-to-day IT practice. So, Derek, one of the things that also as part of our podcast is really to emphasize that, you know, the show is really about our guests, not so much about Veeam. So, Derek, we talked a little bit about the book, which is a big extracurricular that you and I and Scott have been working on. But, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, what's your primary blog and, you know, some of the things you work on, just for the listeners out there to check you out.
Well, wow. The extracurriculars are a little bit crazy this year. My primary blog is at DerekShawn.com, and hopefully Rick will put that in the show notes. I have to spell it here. I've also gotten myself into a nonprofit organization. I had an idea a couple of years ago to bring technology and companies like Veeam and companies like Microsoft to the local area so that other IT professionals who can't go to TechEd or can't go to Microsoft to see them or these big shows can get a chance to interact with those companies and their technologies. The idea is to bring these companies into a brew pub in the area, so everybody gets a little something out of it, and serve lunch, and then serve some beer, do some networking, and go through a topic on a Saturday. So maybe we did one on SharePoint, we did one on PowerShell. In February, we're going to be doing one on backup and recovery, and hopefully people locally can just get a feel for big IT and big enterprise and some of the things that companies in the industry, big and small, are doing. And URL for that is techontap.org.
Awesome, awesome. And then you're also on Twitter, Derek, at WebJunkie, is that right?
That's correct.
Nice. All right. Well, hey, Derek, it's been a pleasure, as always, having you on the podcast. And I will put notes to the primary blog site on the podcast notes. And otherwise, Derek, hey, thank you so much for being on again.
Thanks for having me, Rick. It's been great.